There you go. Bam.
All right.
Welcome to Fated Mates, everybody. In this interstitial, we'll be talking about road trip romances, which I didn't think I loved until all of a sudden I sat down to take notes and realized I absolutely love a road trip romance. I love a road trip movie. I love a road trip everything. And I just want you all to know I'm here for it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I agree. I love a road trip. I love road trips myself in real life. So
I don't. I have restless leg syndrome.
Oh.
And it's hard for me to sit for a really long time. So.
That's fair. That's fair. When I was in college, we used to drive in my tiny little 1987 Hyundai Excel from our college campus at Smith up into New Hampshire. And the drive was like a ridiculous amount of time. And we used to go for weekends to someone's house up there. And it was always like we would buy an issue of Cosmo and lots of Doritos, and we would play the radio very loudly. And so I have very fond road trip memories.
I have sort of a painful road trip memory. I would say like when my now husband and I left Houston to move to California, we drove like a Penske truck across Texas.
No, that's not a fun road trip.
I don't know if you know this. There's like a little thing Texans say about road tripping in Texas. And I didn't know it till we actually got on the road. And then I felt really like I had been duped. And it's the sun has riz, the sun has set, and here we are in Texas yet. Because it is so fucking big. And it's true. Like, you know, especially in I can drive to Wisconsin or Indiana, like, within a couple of hours.
Right.
But, like, you, goddamn, Texas is big.
Right. I have had that experience, too. I grew up in Rhode Island. So you can, and I live in New York City now. And, you know, my husband,
like 5 minutes long, right?
Who is Californian, is like, what is with this place where you can drive through five states in, like, 3 hours? So yeah, when I have driven almost cross country, I drove from New York City to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and that middle, it is a stretch.
Yeah.
There is a lot of just dead air out there.
Well, at least now with like satellite radio, and I mean, I feel like it would kind of be better. You'd have your audiobooks. You'd have Robert Peckoff in your ear holes, and it would be probably a really nice road trip.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But no, I remember like, in being in Missouri or Oklahoma or somewhere, and there being a sign that said next Starbucks 160 miles, like on the side of the road. And I was like, well, we obviously need to stop. Like, I'm fully hydrated, but we are stopping.
Just in case. In Chicago, I'm pretty sure there's a Starbucks one every 160 feet.
Yeah, same. Same in New York. But I mean, it's not even like I needed
160 inches in New York.
It's a terrifying thought for a person from Rhode Island and New York City that you might go 160 miles and not find a thing. Anyway, road trips. I've written a road trip romance, which is very fun in historicals because you can put people in a carriage together and they're sort of forced to like sit close to each other and go very, very, very long stretches of time together. Invariably, you have to pause at a posting inn, and there's never enough rooms, so you have to pretend
never.
To be married and sleep in the same room, probably in the same bed. There might be a bath involved. It's usually pretty sexy.
Of course it is. Although I always do feel like, have you ever ridden in an actual horse-drawn carriage?
I mean,
it just feels like that would be really hard on your, like, restless leg syndrome be damned. It's like restless butt syndrome.
Yes.
Wouldn't that
true.
Hurt?
I will say Joanna Shoup has a great story about this, because when you ask Joanna what the strangest thing she's ever researched is, her answer is that she made sure that you could have penetrative sex inside a carriage. So I don't know how she
I feel
knows
like
that.
That's a real service to Romancelandia that we all know that's true, because I do love it in a book. I love it.
We're going to have her on for her own interstitial. And when we do, we're going to ask her to like pause and talk about penetrative sex, and then we'll tack it on to this interstitial. How about that?
There you go. Perfect.
Added bonus.
I was like, because it may have already happened.
We don't know. We have no idea what the timing is for anything, but like, stay tuned for Joanna talking about sex and carriages.
Amazing.
No, I haven't. But what I can tell you is that it was super duper uncomfortable, and that in romance novels, they are basically clown cars. because especially for me, like, I've always got, like, my heroes who are, like, 7 feet tall and, like, 5 feet broad. And they absolutely can, like, have cunnilingus in a carriage, which is impossible. Definitely did not happen. But there's a reason why romance is shelved in fiction, as I like to say.
That's true.
But speaking of Joanna, I actually picked a Joanna Shute book for this interstitial, so I'm going to go first.
Perfect.
I love Joanna's Gilded Age novels a whole lot. Joanna wrote some wonderful Regencies, which I adore. The Lady Hellion is one of my favorite Regencies. You should all go read it. But her sweet spot and the thing that I love her most for are her Gilded Age books. I love them so much that I begged her to be part of an anthology with me and Tessa Dare and Sophie Jordan so that I could make her write me a Christmas Gilded Age story. I'm wild about her. And she wrote my probably very favorite road trip book, which is Tycoon, a novella that I read in like an hour on a plane.
Yeah, it's great.
Just unable to stop, just tearing through the pages. So basically, Tycoon is strangers on a train set in Gilded Age New York City. The heroine is a perfume counter girl at a department store in the 1890s, and she witnesses a crime that she should not obviously have witnessed, and she has no choice but to take off. So she takes off, chased, and lands herself at Grand Central Station, where a train is about to leave the station, and she basically ends up stowing away inside the private rail car of the president of the Bank of New York, as one does.
Yeah, except that I sort of also wanted it to be with, like, Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd in Trading Places, which is my favorite, like, I'm sorry, like, you're going to talk about, like, the New York City Stock Exchange and a train. It's always going to come into my mind. I just had to say that. I'm sorry.
This is nothing like Trading Places. So the president of the Bank of New York is in his private rail car. So there's this great Ani DiFranco poem. I'm a huge Ani DiFranco fan. And there's this great poem that where she says she dreams of riding like Duke Ellington in her own railway car.
Because once upon a time, the line followed the river and peeked into all the backyards. And the laundry was waving and the graffiti was teasing us from brick walls and bridges. And we were rolling over ridges through valleys under stars. I dream of touring like Duke Ellington in my own railroad car. I dream of waiting on the tall blonde wooden benches in a grand station aglow with grace. And then standing out on the platform and feeling the air on my face.
And I just, the moment we got onto this train car, all I could think was, like, this is how people, like, live the life. Like,
yeah.
Private rail cars that's bonkers. And there's something so decadent. So when we, in the historical world, right, we spend so much time talking about, like, the things that that are sort of markers for decadence, right? And like wealth and excess. So it's like why we love dukes so much. Like it's just a duke is the top. A duke is super rich and super powerful and has everything. And there's like, it's the billionaire of the historical, right? But Joanna like reached into my psyche, like, fiddled around and like planted this idea of railway cars, like private rail cars as being the top.
Super sexy.
The top. Yeah. So here they are. They're now on a train headed for St. Louis. And it is it's a long ride. And she is on the run. And they have to – it's forced proximity, right? This is the reason why road trip romances work so well.
It's like rolling trapped in a cabin or whatever, right?
Well, and don't you sort of have this sense – I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. But I really honestly have this sense that, like, if you are forced to, like, be in the same space as another human for however long, you're going to end up caring for each other. I know that's probably not true. But in my head, like, it feels – maybe it's a little Stockholm-y.
I do think there's something else, though, because it's like the journey itself matches like the arc of the character's relationship changing, right?
Yes.
And I think that it, you know, like, you actually have, there's like dynamic problem solving that has to happen on a road trip, right? Because the obstacles that they sort of face or encounter are ones that are like out of their regular sphere. And I think the other thing I was thinking about a lot is that really good road trip romances, no matter if it's on foot or on a train or in a car, often really reverse the insider outsider role, right? Like the like self-assured gentleman is mm-hmm. going to be destabilized in some way.
Sure.
The young woman on the run is going to find hidden talents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that's what I also really like about it is like the, a really good road trip romance means that there's like this shifting roles.
Yeah.
And it's really unpredictable because you don't literally don't know what's going to happen next. And I that's what I think is really powerful about it too.
I think that's so true because I think that it's fish out of water naturally, right? Because
right.
The president of the Bank of Manhattan is, I mean, no matter how comfortable his private railway car is, it's not his world. Like that's not his, and especially as they're leaving that world behind, right? Like they're leaving, mm-hmm. they're literally physically leaving his world, right? But what I love, so what I didn't mention is that when she turns up at Grand Central and she's being chased by these sort of nefarious characters, she launches herself like straight into this stranger's arms and like plants one on him. And he's like, oh, hey. But also what I love about this is that when you get to the, and this is true of all forced proximity stories or most forced proximity stories where like the end, when the end comes, as the end is inevitable, like you're not going to be stuck in the same place, like in a snowstorm or on a train forever. So the end is inevitable. And that sort of panic of like, but at the end of this, there's no reason for us to be together, right? Like
right.
we were just together for this heartbeat of time. And like, if we are to be together after this, somebody has to act for us to stay together. And that's,
yeah.
I mean, like, he's the president of a bank. She's a perfume girl. Like, these two people do not end up together, except, of course, they do.
Well, and I think that's the other thing. Like, a really good road trip romance often puts people from disparate groups together. In this case, class, right? Like whatever it is, right? Like you can get people together in the train station or in the airport or at the, you know, Ohio Turnpike rest stop or whatever. And that's the other part that's like really interesting about it is that sense of like there's new possibilities. You're going to come into contact with new people. But at the same time, all good road trip romances do have that moment of realization at the end, which is like wherever this new place is that I've ended up, I've brought myself here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't escape my problems. They're still here with me. But now I have this opportunity to like change or grow or right with this new love that I found.
Yes.
I loved Tycoon.
Oh, it's so good. I love Gilded Age. I wish more people would write Gilded Age. I love gas lamps and I love trains and I love the fucking bustle.
Yeah, right.
The bustle is a great invention. And I mean, it's Victorian. And so I guess I could read a bunch of Victorian historicals too. But I just love it. And partially it's probably because I live in New York City. And so like everywhere I look is Gilded Age. But
yeah, right. Have you told us everything we need to know about Tycoon?
Just that it's usually like 99 cents in E and it's so good and you should all just go read
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and because it's a novella, right? It's like literally supercharged like a good romance should
and
be.
If you've never read anything by Joanna, it's a great first taste.
Yeah, definitely.
And you'll be hooked.
So I guess what I should do is start with my historical. Because I do think that like this is a trope that really crosses like historical and contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is Butterfly Swords by Jeannie Lin, which takes place in the Tang Dynasty in 758. And so it is not a train or a car or a carriage. It is mostly on foot and on horseback, mostly on foot.
I love it.
And yeah, oh God, I love this book. And this to me was very much, okay, so I think the best road trip movie ever made, wait for it, is Mad Max Fury Road.
Because, yeah, it is. Right?
But the thing about Mad Max Fury Road that's so amazing as a road trip novel is it's like a boomerang, right? Like halfway through, they realize the place they need to actually go is the place they've already left.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very similar to the arc of this story, where Ailey is our heroine and she is on the run from an arranged marriage. And this is a huge breach of protocol, loyalty, trust, everything. But she knows that the man she sort of was betrothed to, his name is Li Tao. Essentially, it turns out, she finds out, has betrayed her family. And they're rich merchants. And so she decides essentially, like, she's going to leave him, flee back to her, the capital, Chang'an. I'm not sure I'm saying it right, but I did interview the Chinese teacher at school. I was like, how do I say this? I'm constantly interviewing people. And the thing that's really fascinating about it is she essentially, while she's on the run and trying to escape, runs into a Westerner, a man named Ryan. And it's unclear exactly where he's from. At one point he describes go west across the empire and, you know, past a big body of water into the land of two rivers. So it's kind of the modern day Middle East, Iraq or Iran, mm-hmm. right?
Like Mesopotamia.
To me, yeah, exactly.
I remember high school.
I know, right? And he's this strange foreigner. But because of that, she sort of feels like she can trust him because she knows there's no way that he's essentially one of Li Tao's men. Li Tao would never trust this strange foreigner wandering around. And so she feels she says, essentially, I will pay you to get me back to my father. And so they set off on foot. You know, there's a night they have to spend together in a village. And Jeannie Lin, I've got to tell you, the way that she, her characters, physically respond to each other, it's delicious.
Yeah, she's so good.
It's the sexiness drips off the page. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the first time they kiss, it's literally two pages. And I was like, yes.
I love a long kiss. I love it.
It was so delicious. And so it also plays around with class. He can tell that she's wealthy. He's not just of a lower class. He's a barbarian and he's, not Chinese. And so the whole idea of him being an outsider, but at some point she realizes he has more skills on this journey than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's a very well-heeled young woman and she's also, a swords person. She's the one who knows how to use these butterfly swords. It's a great road trip, walk trip, I guess. I don't know.
I love also about that book, I'm a sucker for rich heroine, poor hero.
She's a rich girl. She don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing,
which you would think you would get more, but you don't, because I guess moneyed men are a piece of this fantasy puzzle. But I love it. I love it when heroines have the money in this scenario. One of my very, very favorite old school romances is Judith Ivory's The Proposition. Have you ever read that book?
No, I don't think so.
It's a Pygmalion.
Okay.
Retelling. And the hero, so the heroine is a linguist. It's very close to My Fair Lady. The heroine is a linguist and she's basically been told, she's made a deal that she would, that she can basically gentrify any man that is delivered to her. And the hero is a rat catcher and it's historical and that's his actual job.
He wow
catches rats.
That's intense.
And it is delicious because he is, I mean, because it's My Fair Lady but in reverse, right?
Well, and in this case, you get that, Ryan knows that he's, not good enough for her in basically every single way. And it's also one of those romances where you're like, there is no effing way that these two are going to work it out. Mm-hmm. It just feels impossible. And so it's all the sweeter at the end.
Well, it's that same thing, that sense of, once they get to where they're going, they no longer require each other. That is the one thing. I mean, obviously, Mad Max Fury Road stars Tom Hardy, so I wish there was more kissing always in any movie that has Tom Hardy in it. In fact, I'm sort of surprised it took us this long for me to say the words Tom Hardy on Fated Mates, but here we are. It's happened. The floodgates have opened. But that is the failing of the, like, the reason. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why Mad Max Fury Road could not have been a romance as much as I wanted it to be, as much as I rewrote it in my head to be one. But the big reason is that once they get there, it would not be a good romance road trip, because at the end, they have every reason to potentially stay together. Like, there's nothing keeping them apart that they have to triumph over.
Can I say one more thing about Butterfly Swords, though, that I'll tell you? Okay, we've talked a lot about the personal connection to a book. There's this one part where Ryan, like, they're sort of escaping, like, and she's going to kind of go out first. And, you know, she's like kind of in disguise. And he tells her, walk with a purpose. Like, right. Like, that's how you're going to convince them.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I would say to my son all the time. Like, that's like my mantra as a parent. Like, when, I mean, because we're city people, right? When you're out walking in the city, walk with a purpose, right? And so it was really funny because I was like, oh, I'm not original at all. 758 in the Tang Dynasty, they were walking with a fucking purpose. And I love that. Like, some, when your worldview is like, you see that in a book, I just love that feeling. It was kind of amazing.
Yeah. I have to say, for people who come at me often with, I want to read a historical and, I want to read a historical in an uncommon setting and in a non-traditional setting. This is almost always the book that I recommend them.
I love this book.
Yeah. It's so good. So I'm going to take us in a different direction to paranormal. Back to paranormal, because we don't talk about paranormal ever in the off weeks, but
it's
here
all right.
We are.
There's all the paranormal in the world we could talk about.
Exactly. My second pick is Thea Harrison's Dragonbound, which is the first book in her Elder Races series.
I love this book.
Wait, so help me with the framing of what this series is. Is it urban fantasy? Because it's set, I don't understand the rules, Jen. I need somebody to teach me the rules.
Now, like I said, I'm happy for anyone to correct me. But here's what I would say no, and here's why.
Okay.
To me, urban fantasy is like Mercy Thompson or Kate Daniels. And those are long-running series where there's like a romantic interest. But it's the same, like, the same couple over and over again. Okay. So, like, Kate Daniels is 10 books. Mercy Thompson is 6 or 7 books in progress. The Hidden Legacy series is 3 books, right? But the difference is, it's not that there's, like, it's not like 50 Shades of Grey where you're, like, not sure if they're going to get together.
Right.
It's that, like, it's often a heroine. The heroine's, like, life and job are as primary as the, like, relationship, and her growth as a character over the arc of the series is just as important, if not more so, than, like, whatever romantic ties she has.
Okay. So this is not urban fantasy.
Correct. I wouldn't call it that. Because, you know, to me, a paranormal series is like IAD, where each book is a different, like, romantic pairing.
Although Thea does come back to this particular pairing again.
Yeah. Well, they're so compelling. That doesn't shock me at all.
Also, like, high fantasy versus, is it called low fantasy? The opposite of that?
I don't think so. High fantasy. Now, it's funny because I don't read a lot of high fantasy.
Somebody explained this on the internet to me this week.
Yeah.
High fantasy is a separate world.
Yes. Like, everything
is different. This book is not that.
Right. So, like, that's the other thing about, like, urban fantasy or even, like, Harry Potter fantasy, right? Like, there's a whole base world you already know. And then you might build Hogwarts on top of it.
Yeah.
But high fantasy is like Lord of the fucking Rings.
Yeah. Everything
is
different.
All that shit. Everything is different.
No humans.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So now that we've come to we're just going to go with paranormal.
Yes.
It's like paranormal with, like, more fantasy elements than IAD, for example.
Yeah.
So here we are. We are in New York City, a modern New York City. I'm going to warn everyone. There's a content warning that I want to put on this book, which is the epigraph is a quote from Donald Trump. But don't blame Thea for that. Like, this was a long time ago when we didn't know what we know. If only we'd known.
Yeah, so, man, you got to be careful who you put in your book. That shit.
Anyway, so and it's interesting because I've been talking about this book for many, many years, and I always set it up in a way that that references Donald Trump, and I'm not doing that. I'm not going to do that anymore. But what we have is it is our own world. Magic exists. And these sort of magical beings that have magical skill and magical talent exist. And we have known that they existed for hundreds of years. Like, the whole world just accepts that there is the human.
They're shifters, essentially.
And then there are magic people, like witches and shifters and all sorts of different kinds of magical beings, elves, etc. So here we are. Our heroine is in a pickle, as heroines are wont to be at the beginning of books. It is New York City, and her horrible boyfriend has gotten himself into some trouble and comes to her and said, and she's a thief. She's able to open any lock.
Any lock.
Nothing can be kept from her. Nothing can be locked away from her. And so he comes to her, he knows her skill, and he says, I'm in trouble. These people are after me. They need you to steal something. They need me to. I told them that I could steal something from this dragon shifter, who is basically like the single most powerful person in the world. He is an incredible businessman. He owns like half of Manhattan's real estate. He is he's like a dragon shifter. He is sometimes human. Very, very sexy human male, and sometimes an actual dragon
flying around Manhattan.
And like, he lives in the penthouse apartment of like his tower, and in this tower, warded behind like 1,000 locks and 1,000 doors, is his dragon's hoard, because dragons like gold and stuff. And so the boyfriend says, like, I told them that you could go steal from him. So she goes. She agrees. She goes to this dragon's lair, his building, and she walks into his hoard, and she takes one penny from the hoard and leaves behind a penny from her pocket with a note that apologizes. I'm sorry I took your penny. Here's another one to replace it. And she leaves, and the dragon
freaks out,
loses his
mind. It's like, honestly, I was like, toxic masculinity 101.
he loses his actual mind. He roars so loudly that all the glass windows from like this high-rise building, this skyscraper, pop right out of the building and crash on the street. All of the magic community is like, oh, shit. Somebody is really screwed. And she knows it instantly.
Yeah.
So she takes off and she runs to somewhere in the Carolinas where it's like Elven land. And like, they have a treaty with the dragon shifters, or the shifters, and the dragons are not, like, he is not allowed on their land, and he gives zero fucks about this.
Oh yeah, he is coming for her.
All he wants is to get to her, and because he tracks her using the receipt, she wrote it on the back of a 7-Eleven receipt.
Yeah.
And he tracks her, he finds the footage of her, and then once he can see her face, he can track her in her dreams. Also very hot, I would say. Oh.
Very hot.
There's some very hot dreams that go on in this book. But also, so he finds her. He finds her in the Carolinas, and he's basically like, I'm taking you back with me. But the elves don't love that he's broken their treaty, and so they shoot him, and he's unable to shift into the dragon form and fly her back, so they have to drive her shitty Honda Civic.
It's an amazing story. It really is.
All the way back to New York City. And it's a magical road trip. And there are so many things I love about this book. not the least of which is from the most, you know, here's the thing about alphas, and Cressley does this really well too, you know, almost perfectly, and Thea does it perfectly in this book. I love the moment at the beginning of a book when an alpha sees his mate, like sees the partner that he's going to have through the, you know, at the end of the book, and he can't help but like want to know everything about her. Yeah. And there's a moment, so this receipt that she's left her apology note on is from 7-Eleven, and she's bought a pack of Twizzlers and a Coke, like a Cherry Coke Slurpee or something from there, like a big gulp.
That's a great detail.
And he's like, he says to his like second in command, who's a griffin? He's like, go find the footage of this place, and while you're there, get me a Slurpee. And the griffin is like, and they, it's all through mind, like it's all, like right. All their conversation is via, you know.
Telepathy.
Thank you. Mind talk.
Witching. I'm all like, witch chains.
You guys, I'm a writer. It's okay. And so it's all through telepathy. And literally he's like, get me a Slurpee. And there's this pause where the griffin is like, okay. What size? And it's perfect. I mean, Thea Harrison is, it's so good. And then he drinks it and he's like, oh, this is disgusting. And he throws it away. But there's this wonder, like he's just, and then of course, like when he finally sees her, he's like, mine, you're mine, 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 mine. And we've talked about my
right,
like,
of course.
Love of mine.
We love mine. I know.
Even though, I mean, your faves are problematic, but. So yeah, anyway, I just adore it. This road trip is great. It takes them, you know, here, there, and everywhere. They end up in another realm. You know, there's this big question as to what she is. She doesn't know what she is, and neither does he. Nobody has ever seen anybody like her. So, like, the big mystery
is. Yeah, it's amazing.
And then, of course, I gave this to somebody. I recommended this book to somebody who really loves, I think, high fantasy is the, and they were like, instantly they knew what she was because like Thea's coded a lot of like honest to God mythology into this book. And they were like, oh, she's obviously blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, yeah. I didn't know that until the end. But anyway, so there's lots to love.
Too bad y'all don't work with me because I have a like hidden stash of romances I keep under my desk. In paper that I lend out to people I work with, like on the down low.
Nice.
And this is one of them. I like picked it up somewhere. I think I was in like a thrift store and I was like, ooh, this should be in my stash. And so it is one that if you work with me, I should like make a list of what's in that bag. It's like Beverly Jenkins. It's some of your books. It's like, and it's like, I'm always trying. It's like Cressley. One, like, oh, no, actually no, because I
too
feel
much.
Like. To, well, and
he
I'm
gnaws
like,
off his own leg. Isn't
he gnaws off his own leg. These are starter romances, no. Sarah.
It's a 300 level romance.
Yeah, exactly. There's The Fixer by Helen Kay.
Oh, I love that one. We should have Helen Kay on to do a romantic suspense.
Are you listening, Helen Kay? We want you on.
She's probably not, but she's gonna.
We're gonna tag her. It's fine. Exactly. I'm pretty shameless about the tagging. Yeah, I love this one. Okay, so let me do my last one, which I had many that I was considering and I kept like texting you, what about this one, this one? And then I was like, this is the one, and it's Hell Breaks Loose by Sophie Jordan.
Sophie, we love you.
I know. Well, and here's the thing about this is part of this Devil's Rock series, which I've mentioned before that I read in one big gulp. And what I love about this road trip romance is that it really pushes all the boundaries of like plausibility in a lot of ways. And because what here's the setup, right?
Desert.
She's the daughter of the president. She's like the first daughter, I guess. And she's in her like mid-20s and she just feels so like confined by her life. And her father is heading towards re-election and he basically has told her that she's going to have to get married because voters love a wedding and she is not in love with her boyfriend. He's kind of like a beard, right? Like he's a nice guy, but they don't have any chemistry. They've never even had sex. They're more like companions. And her father's been like, you have to marry this guy. And she one night decides she's going to just like exert this little inch of freedom by ducking her Secret Service agents and walking out of the hotel and just going down the street and going into a restaurant by herself. And in that, like, 39 seconds she's out on the street, she manages to get kidnapped. As one does.
I feel like the first line of that book is something like, it was remarkably easy to lose the Secret Service, like your Secret Service detail. Like, it's such a great beginning because you're like, wait, what? What is happening? Who is this?
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, what's going on? And yet she's so and like, here's this. Well, let me talk about the hero and then I'll talk about like why I love this like road trip romance. So the hero has honestly just as crazy of a story. His name is Reed Alistair, and he was an inmate at Devil's Rock, but he has like essentially some business to take care of. And he's ready to take down the guy who essentially like kind of turned over the evidence that had him put away. Now, Reed is guilty of what he's been put in jail for. It's not like he's like this innocent man, which I really did like in this series. It wasn't like, you know, these are not men who are just like, oh, I'm a white man who's been railroaded. Like, that's not it.
No, they've all done the things that they were sent to prison for.
And he staged a fight that was severe enough that he would get sent to the hospital because he knows that escaping from the hospital is going to be easier than escaping from like the prison itself. And so he essentially stages his escape right after the first daughter has been kidnapped. And that's sort of a coincidence, but it means that like no one's really looking for him because the whole entire world is way more caught up in the drama of where she is. And they end up together.
It's so romance novel. It's like the level. This is the thing about romance. Like if you're reading a great book, like if somebody has written really, really well, and like, granted, like I'm slightly biased here because Sophie Jordan is one of my very best friends in the world. I would like to point out I did not pick this book. Jen picked this book.
No, I know. Right.
but so like obviously I think Sophie writes the best romances. But I would say, like, if you are reading a book written by a great romance writer, that writer can make you believe anything is plausible, which is basically the whole reason why we're doing this podcast.
Well, and I think it's like an example. Remember I said earlier that like the journey is just like a metaphor for whatever they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are really trapped, right? He's literally a prisoner. She's like a prisoner essentially of her life in, you know, being the first daughter. So when they both like break out and find each other and they're on the run, it's like literally them kind of trying to leave their lives behind. But I think the thing that I also really liked about this book is I loved Grace. I loved the heroine. And part of it is because she doesn't know what she's capable of. And yet once she's been taken, she finds this inner strength. And there's a lot of times, and my suspicion is that some readers would call her, like, too stupid to live. She does a bunch of things where you're like, come on. Like, at one point, she basically tries to escape. She's in, like, the middle of nowhere, Texas, and she just takes off running. And, you know, it's so tempting to be like, oh, my God, that's so stupid. Who would do that? Well, you know what? Someone who's fucking terrified would do that.
I would.
Right? Of course you would. Like, it's her chance, and she's not going to let it go.
No.
And I found that to be really, like, really fascinating. Like, right? Like, sort of, like, this whole idea of, like, there's no more logic and reason. You're just, like, an animal. It's, like, pure instinct. And the fact that she's going to, like, try and run. And they come to this, they essentially, after lots of, you know, traveling, end up together in this cabin. And, and of course they fall in love. But I thought it was just a really, like I said, like, if I, like, describing the setup, you're like, what? No way.
Yeah.
But I found that it really worked. And I think the reason it works is they're both running away from, like, that sense of their lives being totally controlled. And they're both running towards the idea of that, like, there's something better out there.
Yeah.
And that's why it works.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because I think that there is, so I think one of the challenges, so one of my very favorite romance novels ever of all time is Judith McNaught's Perfect.
Which I for sure have read.
Which is the one where, talk about suspending disbelief, is the one where he's like an Academy Award winning like superstar movie star. And he shoots he shoots his ex-wife, like, as part of a movie, as part of a scene in a movie, and instead of the gun being loaded with blanks, it's loaded with real bullets, and she dies. Mm-hmm. And so he goes to prison because they think he did this on purpose because they had this contentious marriage. And he breaks out of prison and abducts the heroine in a, like, snowy Texas rest stop. And they drive up into the Rockies where they have this, like, amazing, like, forced proximity, right? Where they're, like, trapped in a snowy cabin for X number of weeks. And I think and it's the book, as Sophie was writing these Devil's Rock books, I kept coming back to this Judith McNaught prison book, right? Which is, you know, again, he didn't do it. He was innocent. Like, he was, you know, wrongly accused, et cetera, et cetera. But what's really fascinating to me is that in that, like, is the shift over time, which we've been talking about every episode of Fated Mates, IED, is this kind of sense of, like, then it wasn't – the power dynamic was, like, he was had all the power. She wasn't running from anything. She was just, like, stopped at a rest stop to gas up, right? And then – so, like, he did abduct her. Like, it was an abduction story. But, like, you're right. In this particular case, Sophie's written, like, an abduction story where the heroine is – also trying to escape something. And that's a powerful shift in thematically in this.
Right.
Like, over romance time. Writ large.
Well, and even Butterfly Swords is very similar in that way, right? Like, she's like, I can't be with my arranged marriage. Like, he is a danger to my family and they're still my family. You're not my family yet. I'm going to run away from this.
Right.
They're both running from, like, sort of the wrong man into the arms of the right one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess all of them, right? Like, Dragonbound 2 and Tycoon. They're all, like, heroines running from something.
Well, and this is the part that I think is always really fascinating about a road trip romance, is it's like you're running from something, but is it something you can really run from?
Mm.
Right?
Oh, look at you can't see Jen's face, but I'm getting teacher face right now. I'm getting like...
And that's the part that I think it's like, right? And then that's like the fated mate part. Like,
sure.
Because then think about of all of the roads in the world, we ran to each other on this one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason that's been really powerful ever since Oedipus. Like, I came to a crossroads. Now, like, Oedipus, it goes sideways, right? Whoops, it was my mom. But I feel like, right?
It was my mom. If only interstitials had show titles, that would be it.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Right? But, that's the part that's so fascinating. Like, that has been... Like this, I came to a crossroads. Like, road trip romances are primal because it really is like putting you at a crossroads and you meet someone else at that crossroads and bam, now your whole life is different.
Agreed.
And I didn't think I had such strong feelings about road trip romances, but I was so into preparing for this one.
Also, I would just say as a writer, road trip romances have a straight shot of conflict. Like, you're so one of the things that when you sit down to write a story, one of the ways that you can really like plug into strong conflict, which conflict is, for those of you who are not writers and don't think about writing, the way we get you to turn the page is conflict, right? Is the end of every chapter, the moment when you're like, one more chapter, and then something happens, boom, at the end of the chapter, and you think, I have to keep going, that's conflict. And the way that we imbue books with conflict, there are lots of different ways, but one of the easiest ways is to put a ticking clock on it, right? And a road trip is a natural ticking clock. Like, by the end of the road trip, these two have to be together or not together. Like, they have to be into each other or not into each other. And you've also established a situation where you can put a hero and a heroine or two heroes or two heroines or three people on a page, right?
Mm-hmm.
And keep them together but separate. Yep.
Well, and it's like a series of obstacles,
sure.
Right? I mean, so they have to solve problems together. They have to figure it out. Like, you find hidden strengths, right? Like it really is. I mean, for most of us, road trips are pretty boring, but right, mm-hmm. road trips and books are full of like fascinating dilemmas. Things are going to go wrong. How are you going to fix it? Are you going to fix it together and move forward together? Which means you're building up that relationship all along. As a reader, it's really pleasing. You see them working together, right, to successfully end the journey.
Thinking that they want the journey to end, right? Because both of them have this goal of getting to the end. And then, of right. course, you get there and you realize, like, wait a second, but them being together was all the joy.
Let's bone.
Well, they've already boned in a roadside inn.
Yes. I don't think mine do bone in a roadside inn. The book is The Rogue Not Taken, and I know, and she definitely gets shot. There's some, like, sexy medicine that goes on.
There's definitely carriage sex, right?
There's certainly carriage, like, orgasms.
Noodling.
Yeah.
Noodling.
I mean, if you're in a carriage and you're not getting an orgasm, you're doing it wrong.
Even in a modern day road trip romance, often there's only one hotel room.
I mean, that's, of course, because this is one of those moments, and I know now we're getting into, like, full episode, like, whatever. These interstitial episodes are not interstitial anymore, you guys. Surprise.
They're in between. They're just as long.
Now we're getting to that point, though, into that sort of conversation about, like, true tropes, right? Because the single hotel room, like, it's almost as though if I wrote you a road trip romance and they got to a hotel and there were two hotel rooms, you'd be like, what the fuck kind of book is this? Has Sarah McLean never read a romance novel?
Or, like, there's multiple hotels at every exit? No, there's just one.
No,
there's no hotels now on their phone.
No.
There's just one.
There's one. No, they definitely don't have Hotel Tonight or anything, any of that shit. There's one hotel. It's run by one person and his wife.
There's keys. It's an actual physical key.
And there is one room, and it's not a double room. It's one bed, one room.
It's a little cold. They have to snuggle.
And somebody's going to offer to sleep, like, on the floor, and that's not going to happen. I mean,
someone's going to go into the bathroom and come out in a towel.
Sure. It's like, it's winter, and we're in a, you know, cabin in the woods. Obviously, there's going to be a snowstorm. Like, sure. And if there isn't, are you really delivering the promise?
Are you really writing romance?
But I mean, so my friend Carrie Ryan, who writes zombie novels and lots of other, like, great sort of darker YA, always says to me, like, you have to think about the promise of the premise, right? Like, and when you establish, and in romance, especially when I say, oh, I'm writing a road trip romance, or oh, I'm writing a Guardian Ward romance, or oh, I'm writing a Scotland romance, like, or a, I don't know what, you know, whatever I'm writing. It's like the readers know what that's code for. And so they know instantly what scenes they know what scenes they want in there. And in a road trip, they want a single hotel room. If there's a and they want carriage sex.
Obviously. I mean, you might as well be like, and they want the sky to be blue. I know. Monsters. They want any penny stolen from the dragon horde to be replaced with another one.
They want the heroine to eat Twizzlers.
They do not want anyone meeting their mother at the crossroads, though.
That's... No. I don't want that. Anyway. No. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That was Road Trip Romances. We will be back next week with more IAD. And... thanks for listening. Always, please tell us if you love us. We like that. Please don't forget to subscribe if you're enjoying the podcasts, and also to like and review if that's a thing that you would like to do, and maybe tell your friends if you think they would like us to. We like you guys. So...
thank you. And tell us, of course, we'd love to hear about some of your favorite road trip romances. We know that we are dangerous to your TBR. Feel free to return the favor. Did it record?
Oh, it wasn't recording.
Oh, okay, good,
sorry.
Okay. How do you say the Chinese city, C-H-A-N-G-A-N?
Chang'an.
Say it again.
Chang'an.
And tell me about it.
Oh, it's the capital of ancient Tang Dynasty China.
That's right. And it means?
Oh, eternal peace.
This is what you get when you work with a Chinese teacher.
<High five. laughs>